On tonight's show, we wrap up our Week 12 coverage.
Greer putting the ball on a play. He gets it out deep, and Havlicek steals it! Over the stand zone! Havlicek stole the ball! It's all over!
L.A. strong at this critical time. We have postponed games in the NBA. We look at the impact on the NBA of the fires. And much more. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Crossover Across Time podcast. We're back here on the first of what will end up actually being three Monday episodes. We're getting caught up on some coverage. We had a bonus episode planned as well. And then, of course, later we'll do our normal Monday episode. First of all, I'm your host, Carson Keel. Welcome to the show, or welcome back to the show, both previous listeners and brand new listeners, previous listeners alike. Thank you for tuning in. We really can't thank you enough for your support on the show. Yeah, we're going to start with the big news item, and of course this is a continuing news story that's progressing. We haven't seen an end of this quite yet. Sorry if I'm not necessarily flustered, but I'm trying to get all this together because there's a lot of news to cover here. But of course the big item that's impacting so many people, of course, within this region specifically, but people across the nation and the world who are, so saddened by what we're seeing in Los Angeles and the greater Los Angeles area with these wildfires. It's, of course, California and LA have dealt with various levels of fires and wildfires at various times. There's been an increase in these struggles, but nothing quite like this, at least that I can remember. Upwards of billions of dollars in damage to homes, and of course, we've already seen, I think, a few dozen deaths, unfortunately, and countless more lives that have been impacted by the loss of possessions, of home, of everything that they have. And so, just so difficult to imagine. And certainly we want to, perhaps dedicate this episode to those who have been impacted, in whatever way that might be meaningful or impactful in any sort of measure. The fight continues on. They're, dealing with, it seems, massive wind forces that are hindering their ability to slow down the spread, and they're causing continued growth of fires. It's just tough, and as we mentioned in the open, and we'll talk about it with the news, we've seen some postponed games from both the Lakers and Clippers, and we've also seen from the Los Angeles sports franchises coming together. They've been partnering with charities and local nonprofits to sell LA Strong merchandise that all the profits go towards the effort of helping those impacted, helping the effort to fight those fires and get everything under control so they can start to truly rebuild and heal. But that fight still battles on. So again, felt it was really important, especially with a lot of impacts, so close to home. LA not too far from me here on the West Coast area in Utah. It's not that far away, but of course also just on a human level, it's so impactful. But then of course also in terms of our podcast coverage and the NBA, we've seen NBA impacts, postponed games, of course, but also players and coaches and personnel impacted as well. We will get into that in a moment. Along with that, just quick apologies that this episode has been delayed. Originally, of course, this would have been our Friday episode for week 12. This would have been January 10th. Scheduling conflicts, pretty busy schedule, just didn't quite get it done. At this time is where I'm, you know, I feel the need to hopefully state, and of course I'm disappointed that I haven't been able to record episodes as routinely of a schedule as I would like, but at the same time, this is something that is more of a passion project for me, as well as Wyatt and Justin at this time, and other co-hosts. We might have some other people hopping on soon, but it's a passion project. We're doing our best to keep up with it as much as possible, but it isn't always possible, especially for me, as my current line of work will be getting busy within the next few months and over the next few months. And so, again, just we ask you to please be patient with us as we figure this out. That all being said, obviously not a bright note to start the episode on, and I do apologize for that. But important things to talk about to kind of preface, again, especially the wildfires and those impacted. We're, again, wishing the best for those impacted and also for first responders. Thanks to them for doing everything that they do to fight such a tough battle, and the response that they've had, they've done a phenomenal job. You know, you can't imagine where LA would be without those people willing to put their lives on the line to fight those fires and those battles and help out those people impacted. And so with that, what this episode will essentially be what the Friday episode would have been. We're just going to recap the Thursday and Friday games, keep it a little bit simple. We'll cover the latest news. We'll, of course, do a franchise focus, and somewhat appropriate that we're doing a focus for the Los Angeles Lakers. Again, they're impacted, their community is impacted, maybe in some sort of small way with the troubling times, whether now or later on. It can be, you know, because sports can be a uniting thing. This could hopefully be of value to look at a franchise as great as the Lakers and the great history that they have that could maybe hold value. That's what we certainly hope. And so we'll be doing that franchise focus as planned. And then we won't do our Fantasy Friday segment or weekend forecast since those games have actually already commenced and completed. And so we'll just wrap up the show at that point. So with that being said, let's go ahead and get right into our normal show, starting with our latest game summaries, which includes starting lineup, as well as nightly notables mixed in. Again, if you're not familiar, basically we choose five games from whatever times, you know, whatever days we're covering games for, five games to go more in depth on. And then the remaining games will cover the important stats of note from those matchups. So we'll start on Thursday night, January 9th, starting with the Orlando Magic hosting the Minnesota Timberwolves, a matchup of defensively oriented teams, younger teams with some bright potential, and highlighted by a poster dunk by Anthony Edwards, who had a great game in this one, on Anthony Black. Of course, he's already starting to get a number of memorable dunks in his career, as you'd expect for such a high-flying player. But regardless, the more important thing, he had a good game. Timberwolves played well. They get the win in Orlando, 104-89, for their third straight win. It's the Wolves' fifth game, holding their opponent to 90 or less scoring, points scored. That's second only to the Magic, so interestingly enough, that came against the Magic. Magic have the most such games, holding their opponent to 90 or less in the NBA this season. Box score notes here. We'll start with the Magic. They were led by Goga Bitadze, 15 points for him, 8 boards, 3 blocks. He was one of 5 double-figure scorers, but no one more than 15. They got 14 from Caleb Houston, 13 from Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 12 from Cole Anthony, and then 10 off the bench from Jet Howard. Howard with 8 boards, 4 assists. And then Cole Anthony, 2 steals, 2 blocks. Nice defensive effort for him. You compare that to the Timberwolves, led by Julius Randle, 23 points, 10 boards. Edwards with 21 points, 7 assists, 2 steals. 4 of 11 from 3-point range was Edwards. They got 16 off the bench from six-man extraordinaire Naz Reid, who also had 2 steals and a block. He was 2 of 4 from 3. Then they got 12 points from Dante DiVincenzo starting at guard alongside Anthony Edwards. No Mike Conley in this game. He came off the bench. They're looking for maybe a little bit of a different fit. DiVincenzo, 12 points. He was 4 of 7 from 3. And then they got 10 points, 12 boards from Rudy Gobert at that center spot. So, again, Timberwolves beat the Magic. That's the first of our three games. Next, the Golden State Warriors in Detroit taking on the Pistons. The Pistons have been red hot, but the Warriors actually able to get the win in this game. Final score, 107-104 for the Warriors in Detroit. It was a close game at the end. Pistons made it a close game with a 24-9 run to close the game. Before that, Warriors had it fairly well in hand. But again, Warriors get the win. They end the Pistons' five-game winning streak, and the Warriors had six players in double figures. So let's actually go into the box score now. Starting with the Pistons, they were led by Cade Cunningham, as you'd expect, 32 points, 8 assists, 6 boards, 3 steals, 1 block, 3 of 6 from 3. Sensational game from him. You can't ask for much more than that. They got 21 points from Malik Beasley, 4 of 14 from 3, so he struggled shooting there a little bit. 13 points from Tobias Harris, who had 4 boards, 4 assists. 11 off the bench from Ron Holland II, the rookie, and they also got 12 rebounds, 3 blocks, and a steal from Jalen Duren at center spot. You look at the Warriors, meanwhile, they had, again, 6 players in double figures, led by Buddy Hield's 19. Bounce-back game for him. He was 5 of 11 from 3. He struggled lately shooting the ball, but a nice night for him in this one. 17 points for Steph Curry on 2 of 14 shooting from 3. Really rough there. But he does also have 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals in the game. They got 14 from Trayce Jackson-Davis, who also had 10 rebounds. 13 points for both Dennis Schroeder, as well as Gui Santos coming off the bench in this game. 2 steals for him as well. And then 11 points from Lindy Waters III, also coming off the bench. He was 3 of 7 from 3, as, again, the Warriors get the win. That's our second of the three games from Thursday night. And finally, we had a battle of Western Conference hopefuls in the Houston Rockets in Memphis against the Grizzlies. The road team, once again, all three of our games from Thursday we're covering in depth. Road teams winning. The Rockets win in Memphis 119-115, your final score there. Ja Morant did return for the Grizzlies after a 5-game absence, so that was a good side note for them as they're looking to see if they can finish maybe even higher. They're still in good standing in the West, but the Rockets ahead of them and strengthen that lead, of course, with the win here. Strengthen the hold on second over the Grizzlies in third at this time. It was the Rockets' third straight win and also their sixth straight road win, so they've really been getting the job done on the road. Box scores, we'll start with the Grizzlies, led by Ja Morant in his return, 27 points, 3 boards, 3 assists, pretty solid outing. They got 21 points from Jaren Jackson Jr. How about this stat line? 8 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals, and 6 blocks. Monster stats for a former Defensive Player of the Year in Jackson. They got 16 points from Desmond Bane. He had a couple steals as well. 12 off the bench from Santi Aldama. 11 off the bench from Luke Kennard. Aldama with also 9 boards. Kennard, 3 of 5 from 3-point range. Compare that to the Rockets. They were led by Alperen Şengün, 32 points and 14 rebounds, as well as 5 assists. They got 27 from Jalen Green, who was 4 of 8 from 3, who also had 3 steals in the game. 22 points from Fred VanVleet, who also had 4 steals in the game, shooting 3 of 7 from 3. 12 off the bench from Jayshon Tate, 2 of 3 from 3-point range, and then 10 points, 7 boards, 5 assists from Amen Thompson, who's really emerged as a quality rotational piece and a unique athletic player in this league. So again, Rockets get the win there. That's the last of our three games we're looking at more in depth from the Thursday night slate. Remaining games from Thursday. Firstly, the Cleveland Cavaliers without Donovan Mitchell and facing a 12-point third quarter deficit end up getting the win at home against the Toronto Raptors. Final score 132-126 for the Cavaliers. Darius Garland, 40 points and 9 assists. He also had the game sealing clutch 3 with just about 40 seconds left in the game to help get them their 12th straight win. And with that win, the Cavaliers joined the 2016 Warriors as the only teams to start 33-4 or better since the year 2000. So they continue to write very impressive history at this point in the season. Then the Dallas Mavericks won at home against the Portland Trailblazers, 117-111. Your final in that game for the Mavericks. Jaden Hardy, a season-high 25 points and 5 three-pointers. Dallas closed on an 18-2 run, and that's their second straight win without either Luka or Kyrie. Of course, they've been without them for a little bit now. So nice win for them to have another belt. Then the Miami Heat won in Utah in Salt Lake City against the Jazz, 97-92, your final. Bit of a lower scoring game. That's the second straight road win for the Miami Heat. And then finally, the Phoenix Suns won at home against the Atlanta Hawks, 123-115, your final in that game. Suns had four players with at least 20 points: Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Grayson Allen. Also, it was Devin Booker's third straight game with 10 or more assists, and that's the first time in his career he's had such a stretch. So, great stretch for him. Finally, one note from that Thursday night: that Lakers home game against the Hornets was, of course, the first of a few games that did get postponed, as, again, in response to those LA wildfires. So that's the end of our Thursday night slate. Let's go ahead and jump into Friday, where we've got two more games that we'll go in-depth on, starting with a matchup of top teams in the league so far. Some of the top teams, the Oklahoma City Thunder in New York against the Knicks. And how about a nice statement win for the Thunder in New York, in Madison Square Garden. Final score, 126-101 for the visiting Thunder in New York. They used a 30-9 run in the first half to help really give themselves a nice lead. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Isaiah Joe combined for 70 points. Isaiah Joe had a career-high 8 three-pointers in the game, and the Thunder, how about this, are 5-1 at this point now, following a loss this season. They had lost the previous outing, so I think that was the Thunder-Cavs matchup that was such a big deal that we had talked about. And so, great notes from the game. Let's go box scores, starting with the Knicks, led by Jalen Brunson's 27 points in the game, 12 of 12 from the free throw line. Pretty efficient job from him. They got 23 points and 10 boards from Karl Anthony Towns, 16 points, 13 rebounds, and 3 steals from Josh Hart, a very unique player, and he has a great impact for the Knicks. Also 11 points off the bench from Cameron Payne. Not too bad for the Knicks. They probably could have used some more scoring production, certainly from Mikal Bridges, 0 points in the game. He was 0 of 7 from 3. That probably hurt them in the game. We compare that to the Thunder. How about the Knicks in general? Just about 13% from 3 as a team in this game. That will really hurt your chances. You compare that to the Thunder shooting just about 52% from 3. So about 40% better in that respect. SGA with 39. And then Isaiah Joe with 31. He was 8 of 11 from 3-point range for a scorching 72% from deep. They got 19 points as well from Santa Clara, Jalen Williams, who had 5 assists as well, 4 rebounds, 2 blocks, a steal. Isaiah Hartenstein, great impact in his return to New York. 9 boards, 2 steals, 2 blocks. He was greeted very warmly by the Knicks faithful there. 10 boards off the bench for Arkansas Jalen Williams. 2 blocks for him as well. Just great all-around team basketball. Lou Dort, 2 of 3 from 3. That's been the brand for the Thunder this season, especially last season as well. Team basketball, they have a lot of depth that has really come together. And great win once again in New York. That's the second or first of our two games from Friday night's action. Let's go to that last game right now. The Denver Nuggets hosting the Brooklyn Nets, almost the New Jersey Nets, honestly. How long has it been? And we still sometimes want to call them the New Jersey Nets, but Brooklyn Nets. And we had some history here for the Denver Nuggets. Nikola Jokic and Russell Westbrook became the first teammates in NBA history to each record a triple-double in the same game multiple times in a single season. Pretty remarkable stuff. Also, the second time teammates have ever posted 25-point triple-doubles in the same game. The other instance was, funnily enough, Game 3 of the 2023 NBA Finals, with the Denver Nuggets having Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray have such a stat line. So, of course, makes a lot of sense to have Jokic involved in both of those stats. Again, Nuggets get the win, as you'd expect, with some of those numbers. Final score 124-105 for the Nuggets at home as they beat the Nets. Box score wise, the Nets were led by Keon Johnson, who had 22 points. He was one of 7 players in double figures, but outside of Johnson and Tyrese Martin's 19 off the bench, no one had more than 14 outside of that. So that's where that scoring impact was kind of skewed a little bit. They, outside of those two guys, they had 14 from Noah Clowney, and then 10 each from 4 different guys: Zaire Williams, Nick Claxton, Ben Simmons, and then off the bench, Tosun Awoma had that amount. Keon Johnson was 4 of 12 from 3. Tyrese Martin, 4 of 9 from 3. Owoma, 2 of 5 from three. How about 3 steals, 2 blocks for Claxton? But then again, you go look to the Nuggets. Jokic, 35 points, 15 assists, 12 boards, 4 steals. One of his monster stat lines that we've almost become accustomed to at this point. And then Westbrook alongside him, 25 points, 11 boards, 10 assists, starting sort of a shooting guard maybe alongside Jamal Murray. He also had a steal and a block in this game. Michael Porter Jr., 17 points, 6 boards, 2 steals, 2 blocks. They got 12 off the bench from Julian Strother, who was 2 of 5 from 3. They got 11 from Christian Brown with 7 boards. And then 10 off the bench as well for Peyton Watson, 7 boards, 2 steals, 2 blocks. Strother and Watson really starting to help out that Nuggets depth. They've become more dependable guys in the rotation for sure. There's still concerns a little bit, but the Nuggets have been playing much better as of late. Great all-around numbers from those guys. They really killed it in that game, and of course they got the win at home against those Nets, as we mentioned. So that takes care of our two main games from Friday that we're talking about. The remaining games from Friday, let's get right into those right now. Firstly, the New Orleans Pelicans were in Philadelphia facing the Sixers. Sixers saw double-doubles from both Tyrese Maxey and Paul George, but the Pelicans actually got the win in this one on the road. Final score 123-115 for those Pelicans. It was the third win for them in their last 5 games, so getting some positive momentum for a team that has been desperately struggling for most of the season so far. Then the Orlando Magic hosted the Milwaukee Bucks. Magic did see the return of Paolo Banchero for his first game since October 30th. That was great news. He had 34 points in his return to action. Fantastic performance, but then the Bucks won the game. Final score 109-106 for the Bucks in Orlando this time around. Bucks had a combined 70 points from Giannis and Lillard to get their third straight win, and then also Giannis's 43rd career game here, in which he had 40 points and 10 rebounds. That tied Shaquille O'Neal and Joel Embiid for 6th most such games in NBA history. With the win, the Bucks moved ahead to 4th in the East, ahead of the Magic, and of course they also lead the season series 2-0, so important wins when you're talking about seeding and positioning at season's end going into playoff time. So great win for the Bucks there. Next, the Indiana Pacers hosted the Golden State Warriors, and the Warriors actually had no Curry, Steph Curry, no Andrew Wiggins or Jonathan Kuminga, who were their top 3 scorers in this game, and they actually kept it decently close, but the Pacers did still win this one. Final score 108-96 for those Pacers in Indiana against the Warriors. Warriors were held below 100 for the 11th time this season. The Warriors are now 1-10 in those games. For the Pacers, it's their 5th straight win. Tyrese Haliburton, over his last 5 games, shooting red hot, 54% from the floor, 48 from 3, and 88 from the free throw line. Phenomenal stuff from him. Then the Sacramento Kings won in Boston against the Celtics, 114-97. Huge game. Kings used a 38-21 fourth quarter advantage to get their 6th straight win. They returned to 500 after that. They were 19-19 after that game, moving up to 9th in the Western Conference. How about Domantas Sabonis as well? A career-high 28 rebounds, which is the most in Kings franchise history since 1969. It's also the most by any player this season. Kings now join the Oklahoma City Thunder as the only teams to hold the Celtics below 100 points this season. Remarkable stuff for the Kings, again, especially that to make a coaching change like that, to drop Mike Brown and then have a nice little win streak with interim head coach Doug Christie. Really nice surprise for them, as they are returning 500, returning to the postseason picture. Great for them. Final game here. Chicago Bulls won at home against the Washington Wizards, 138-105. Your final score there. In the game, Zach LaVine joined Michael Jordan and DeMar DeRozan as the only Bulls to score 30 or more points in 5 straight games in franchise history. LaVine is also shooting career best percentages from the floor and from 3-point line so far this season. He's had a phenomenal year so far amidst all the trade rumors and so on and so forth. Bulls hovering around a postseason play-in picture once again. Whether that's good or bad for them long term, we'll leave it up to you to decide. But for now, that covers our game summaries from the last couple of nights of action. So let's go ahead and jump into our latest key news from around the league. Yeah. again, just wanted to clarify, not clarify perhaps, but go into the exact news items from what would have been the Friday show in regards to the specific updates about the LA wildfires and what we would have reported on Friday. Firstly, the Thursday night Lakers home game against the Hornets was postponed due to those wildfires in the greater Los Angeles area. Then for the Lakers head coach JJ Redick, this was one of the more heartbreaking stories about this. Head coach JJ Redick did lose his family's rental home in the Pacific Palisades wildfires. You figure, oh, rental home, but of course, still so many of his belongings in there, and the impact that has on the family. Just terrible news. We're wishing the Redick family the absolute best at this time, such a trying time. And then further updates at that point with the Lakers and the Clippers. NBA had announced that the Saturday home games for the Lakers and Clippers against the Spurs and Hornets, respectively, were postponed due to those ongoing fires in the greater Los Angeles area. For the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard, also this news broke that he was stepping away from the team for a moment to be with his family that was forced to evacuate due to Los Angeles area wildfires. So again, all just awful news about these wildfires. That's what we're talking about in the open, this impact to Lakers and Clippers, of course, but also the league. So many players from California and LA specifically, not just players, coaches, front office personnel, arena staff, team staff, personnel. It's just such a wide-ranging impact, and of course, most importantly, those living in Los Angeles in those areas at this specific moment. So again, just wishing everyone the absolute best right now as that battle continues on, and hopefully those fires are under control as soon as possible. I mean, just again, tough situation. And then this was a different situation, but the Atlanta Hawks, NBA did announce that the Saturday home game for the Hawks was also postponed. That game was against the Houston Rockets. Totally separate issue. Severe weather and hazardous icy conditions in the Atlanta area. So we'd also, of course, like to wish our best to those Atlanta residents if those conditions are still affecting people, and for any effect that that had on people up to this point. Mother Nature sometimes can be just very, very cruel, very cold, in terms of it does not care. You know, it will just impact the world however it sees fit, perhaps. And so for Atlanta and the Hawks and everyone, along with the LA situation, just wishing everyone the best. Tough times, and you know, hopefully everything gets under control and people can start to recover from this as soon as possible. Other updates, I'll start with some transactions. Firstly, the New Orleans Pelicans did waive center Trey Jameson III, who was on a two-way contract, and have signed forward Keon Brooks Jr. to a two-way deal to replace that spot. The Memphis Grizzlies waived center Colin Castleton, who was on a two-way deal, and have signed guard Zion Pullen to a two-way deal to replace that. Toronto Raptors signed forward Eugene Omorui to a 10-day contract. Thunder signed center Brandon Carlson to a 10-day contract as well. So those are our latest transactions. For the New Orleans Pelicans, guard forward Herbert Jones, tough news here, out indefinitely with a right shoulder posterior labrum tear. And then also for the Sixers, rookie guard Jared McCain officially ruled out for the remainder of the season after undergoing surgery to repair left knee lateral meniscus tear. So for both those guys, we're certainly wishing them the best as they work to recover from those injuries. Get back on the floor as soon as possible. Other news for the Pelicans. The Pelicans have suspended forward Zion Williamson one game for a violation of team policies. Williamson has reportedly been late to multiple practices and or flights so far this season. So I suppose you have to make those tough calls when that situation does happen. And then finally, the NBA has announced the second returns for the second set of returns for the 2025 NBA All-Star voting. Let me actually go ahead and get those pulled up now. Forgot to have those pulled up before recording the episode, so I do apologize for that. But yes, second set of returns for us here in the Western Conference. Front court led by Jokic, Durant, LeBron, Wemby, Anthony Davis, Şengün at six, Jalen Williams, Andrew Wiggins, Domantas Sabonis, Jaren Jackson. In the guards, we have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Stephen Curry, Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, Anthony Edwards, James Harden, Ja Morant, Devin Booker, De'Aaron Fox, Devin Booker, and Norman Powell. In the Eastern Conference, we've got Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jason Tatum, Karl-Anthony Towns, Paolo Banchero, Jaylen Brown, Jimmy Butler, Franz Wagner, Evan Mobley, Joel Embiid, and Paul George. Banchero and Wagner still getting high votes, especially Banchero. You know, he's only played about seven games or so far. And then guards, LaMelo Ball, Donovan Mitchell, Damian Lillard, Jalen Brunson, Trae Young, Tyrese Maxey, Cade Cunningham, Jordan Poole, Darius Garland, and Tyler Hero all leading your votes, the top 10 for those respective positions in their respective conferences. So with that, that takes care of our latest news, at least as of Friday. So with that, let's jump into our main segment for you today, our franchise focus for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Franchise focus.
Yes, Los Angeles Lakers, again, perhaps somewhat appropriate at this time that we can have something positive to focus on in terms of the LA area and the Lakers and their organization, what they've been able to do. The current team has been good, you know, very competitive. They've been right near the 5-6 spot in that Western Conference, a very, very tough Western Conference. LeBron James, of course, still continuing to excel even at 40 years old at this point. Anthony Davis, of course, still underrated and underappreciated after battling with injuries. He's been more available than ever, and he's been just as dominant as ever with his great defensive impact. He's a consistent scorer. He's leading the team in scoring. LeBron, great in support at this point in his career as well. And then they, of course, made the trade. They traded away D'Angelo Russell just a few weeks ago to bring in Dorian Finney-Smith, who now allows the Lakers to then start either Max Christie or Dalton Knecht, and then have LeBron or Austin Reeves or maybe even Christie helping run the offense a little bit. Reeves, the second leader in assisting on the team. Hachimura, quality starting forward as well, shooting well from three-point range this year. I think that head coach J.J. Redick has done a quality job so far, working to address some of the offensive question marks and concerns with the team, where guys are getting more three-point opportunities as a team. They're shooting better from three, it feels like. And then defensively, they haven't given up too much, although perhaps they could be somewhat better there. Some people criticize Anthony Davis starting at the five rather than playing the power forward that he's sometimes felt a little bit more natural at. But they're playing well. They're getting some nice wins. They've got, you know, Reeves stepping up alongside James and Davis to be that third guy. And then they have decent rotation. I think one of the big things that has hurt them continually last season and this season has been the absence of both Christian Wood and Jared Vanderbilt, neither of whom have played so far this year. They did not have a chance to play very much at all last season as well. But this is a team that should be in the playoff picture fairly firmly. The question is if they can go super far. And then the question along with that is what more does LeBron really want to do? I think that's more the appropriate question than what he can do. I think he's shown that it's going to be another while still, even at this point, before age truly starts to hamper and limit LeBron's abilities on the floor. But what he really wants to do is the question mark. Of course, he's accomplished so much as a four-time champion, four-time MVP, multiple time, countless times All-Star. He's the league's all-time leading scorer. He's up near the top in virtually every statistical category in the history of the league. Many people have and will continue to make the argument for him as the greatest player of all time compared to Michael Jordan. The question is, how much more does he want to try and do in his career? When does he decide that he just doesn't have the same passion for the game? His body is not responding as well to the game. The aches and pains are taking longer to go away, to recover. All of those questions are really the determining factor. And I'm very curious to see what happens for the Lakers at that point. When LeBron is done, They've got, of course, Bronny in the fold, but he's, you know, a long-term developmental project who's getting more G League opportunities, and people think he's more of a rotation player at best anyways. So you've got Anthony Davis as an all-star. You have Reeves, who's a quality player. Do they try and swing trades for more all-star names to bring in? Do they start to take more of a building from scratch type of approach? What do they look at? You know, because I think that for the Lakers, they short-term wise should be a playoff team as long as LeBron's around. I don't think they're quite in a championship mix. I don't think that's been a surprise for the last few years. But once LeBron departs, how do they build the team going forward? But I think that their management has really done a much better job. Having a coach like Redick in place, he has potential to maybe be a guy that can stick around long term. And so for Lakers, there's optimism either way. I think that they should be fun to watch. That it's a more healthy organization than it's been in more recent years. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. I think that's kind of the current state of the Lakers as we speak. So with that, let's go ahead and move into our historic Lakers squad. And this time around, we're talking about not only one of the greatest Lakers teams of all time, but of course, this also means that anyways, but one of the greatest teams all time, full stop. We're talking about the 86-87 Los Angeles Lakers. The previous year, the Lakers were very good. 62 wins, lost in the Western Conference Finals in a surprise to the Rockets, who were only 51-31. Those Rockets lost to the Celtics in the finals. That Celtics team, 67 wins. That one also considered one of the best teams of all time. But this 87 Lakers team, 65 wins, and they were dominant. They only lost three games in the playoffs, won the finals 4-2 versus those same Celtics in a rematch. Celtics have their own question marks. They feel that they could have won that series, but Lakers won it regardless. And I mean, what a rotation, what a lineup here. You start with Magic Johnson, the league's MVP, 24 points per game, 12 assists, 6 rebounds, and nearly 2 steals a game. Johnson was the leading scorer on this team, technically, but of course, with the assists, his greatest asset was his playmaking. He had 6 teammates averaging double figures scoring, starting with Big Game James Worthy, 19.5 points per game, 6 boards, 3 assists, and a steal and a block, making the All-Star team underrated forward. He was, of course, a college teammate of Michael Jordan at North Carolina. And his career with the Lakers, he was, you know, a third gunner often with Kareem. But he had a great impact here, and he had clutch moments as well. Byron Scott here as one of the early three-point marksmen. 43% from three on just under 2 attempts per game for 17 points per game. 3.5 assists, 1.5 steals, keeping the defensive identity sound. They had 17 points as well per game from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He was 39 years old at this point, reaching the tail end of his career, but still an all-star, still effective at that age, just about 7 rebounds per game, a block per game as well. And then 3 guys with about 10 points per game, A.C. Green, Michael Cooper, and Michael Thompson. Green, the starting power forward, a glue guy in some ways, about 8 boards per game, a steal and a block per game. Unique power forward with some impact. And then Michael Cooper, your defensive player of the year, also 3rd and 6th man of the year voting. Also Michael Thompson, Klay Thompson's dad, a quality big off the bench. You talk about depth, this team certainly had it. With Cooper and Thompson, with, you know, 2 phenomenal 6th men here. Cooper, such a unique 6th man, bringing defensive impact, while Scott started with the shooting and scoring ability. You could swap those guys depending on what look you needed to have against the team. Thompson, great backup option, and played a good amount of minutes behind Kareem at that point in Kareem's career. Then you have Kurt Rambis, quality, rugged power forward who averages just under 6 rebounds per game in 19 minutes played. He can come in and bolster your rebounding. You've got Billy Thompson, 23 years old, but a promising scoring wing. He could get you some baskets in some moments. Frank Burkowski would later go on to be a bigger rotation piece for a finals team with the 96 Supersonics later in his career. Wes Matthews, the father of Wesley Matthews, a decent point guard as well. So 1 through 11, the depth here, there's a ton to like about this Lakers team. Again, they were kind of a juggernaut. This is the best iteration, really, of Magic Johnson, of the Pat Riley coach teams, of these 80s Lakers, even though Kareem was older. They just had all the pieces in place. It's such a fun team to look at, to watch. This was the epitome of Showtime. You could really argue this was the height of the Lakers, full stop. I mean, of course, they had the three straight championships with Shaq. They had multiple championships early with George Mikan. But this was the epitome of the flashy Los Angeles game combined with stacked roster, star talent, unbelievable teams. This is, you know, you can argue this is the epitome of Laker basketball and one of the greatest teams of all time once again. First round, sweep the Nuggets in three games. Second round, beat the Warriors in five. Conference finals, beat the Supersonics in a four-game sweep before moving on to the finals to face those Celtics again. Six-game series. They beat those Celtics for revenge, and that's really all you need to say about this Lakers squad. Just deep, talented, well-coached, star-driven, phenomenal. That's all you can say about it. Just a phenomenal team. One of the greatest teams of all time, right? In the conversation with teams like the 96 Bulls, 86 Celtics, 83 76ers, this team right in there firmly as one of the greatest teams of all time. With that, let's jump into our last leg of our franchise focus, being our historic player from the franchise's history. And this time around, we're talking about George Mikan, perhaps the first true superstar in the NBA's history. He has a very interesting career. He technically started his career his first year in the old NBL, as it was known, one of the two leagues that merged to form the NBA. In the NBL, he was on the Chicago American Gears and was a quality player there, was maybe already a star. But then once he moved to the Lakers of the BAA, and then later that team merged, or that league merged with the NBL to form the NBA, the Minneapolis Lakers, he played there for not that long. And that's the most interesting part, his impact there. He played for six seasons with the Lakers, but won six championships in his career. Four championships in his career. Was a four-time All-Star, five-time All-NBA first team. And you look at his stats compared to so many of the peers. Firstly, his size. He was a 6'10", 245 center. He was one of the first, not only superstars, but first big players. I mean, so many of the centers in this same era, in the mid to late 40s, centers were guys that were 6'7", 6'8". The height wasn't as much there, and certainly the strength. But Mikan was not only tall, but stout. At 6'10", 245, he really started to showcase what the future of the league would be for decades in terms of big centers, strong centers inside. But then also his numbers. His first three seasons, he averaged 28 points per game with likely 14 rebounds. Only one of those three seasons did they track rebounds as a stat. That's the other thing about Mikan and the Minneapolis Lakers in this early days of the NBA. Some of those key stats and fundamental stats, they weren't even tracking yet. They weren't even tracking rebounds for a period of time. And so that is a different impact there. Later on, he was still rebounding well, not scoring quite as much, but he had a great team around him. He had Vern Mikkelsen, Slater Martin in there too. So those Lakers teams, of course, became one of the earliest dynasties in professional basketball. He was a three-time scoring champ. Again, those first three seasons dominated the league. If you've played basketball at all, or even if you've just been around the game, you've likely heard of the Mikan drill. One of his big impacts, of course, starts with underneath the basket. If you're looking up the basket like this, you know, you're going right hand, bank off the glass, or hook shot, and then you're going left, and you're going back and forth to get that kind of ambidextrous touch. That's what Mikan, his impact was fundamental scoring inside, deft touch, if you will, post scoring, along with rebounding. And of course, if they had blocked shots, he probably could have been a decent shot blocker as well in terms of the statistical footnote. In this era, shooting about 40%, 42% from the floor, that was a quality percentage at that time as well. So many of the All-Stars, if you look at this era, were shooting maybe 40%, if not lower. And so different era of basketball, different point in the history of the game, really. But just phenomenal career. And he has stood for so long as, how would I say this, really, the prototype, if you will. And you see it in the NFL. You look at players, early in the passing game becoming more prominent, guys like Johnny Unitas or Otto Graham. George Mikan is that for the NBA. He became the precursor to the Wilt Chamberlains and the Bill Russells, who then led to the Kareem Abdul-Jabbars and the Nate Thurmans of the world, the Walt Bellamy's, which then gave way to the Akeem Olajuwons, Patrick Ewings, the David Robinsons, Shaqs, all those players. The great bigs, which again, that was such an important part of building a team, building championship teams, the greatest players in the history of the game. For decades, from Mikan's impact starting in the mid to late 40s throughout the mid 50s, he was the foundational piece of that. And most importantly for the Lakers in this respect, he got those early championships for the Lakers, which helped kick off a franchise that was accustomed to winning, even when they moved to Los Angeles. And even though it took a while with Jerry West and Wilt Chamberlain, they got to that championship eventually. They got into the championships once again in the 80s, and then into, of course, the 2000s. It laid the foundation, similar to how Mike laid the foundation for the big man and the star players we know it. His teams laid the foundation for the great Lakers franchise and their history that we know today. So he's such an important player. You can't really overstate his importance in the history of not only the Lakers and the NBA, but the history of basketball. Such a foundational, impactful player, and just a great one. All-time George Mikan. It was only a few years ago that his number got retired by the Lakers, his number 99. So iconic, first of all, but also remarkable that it took that long for the Lakers to retire his number. Of course, perfectly justified. Should have happened long ago that they did retire his number. And George Mikan, a great player. That rounds off our franchise focus for the Los Angeles Lakers. So with that, let's go ahead and just jump right into, we of course are not going to preview any games, since those games we would have previewed have already taken place. We'll do some week previews on our third episode today. Before we move on, and before I forget, we revealed it on our social media pages, of course, the answer to our latest 20 guesses player from the Wednesday episode. And again, apologies that we took so long to get it, but the player that stat line was for was Roy Hibbert. He was a two-time All-Star, of course. He made an All-Defensive team. I think that was either 2014 or 2012. And he had a great impact for those early 2010s Pacers teams that contended with the Heat in that Eastern Conference in the playoffs. So Hibbert, forgotten career, but very effective at his best. Underrated a little bit. But just wanted to make sure we covered that before we really start wrapping up today's show. We'll start with our This Day in History fact. Again, this is for Friday, just for simplicity's sake. So this is going back to January 10th of 1996. On this day, again, January 10th of 1996, in the Celtics' 113-104 win against the Sacramento Kings, Boston guard Dana Barros sank a three-point field goal in his 89th straight game, which is an NBA record streak that would be stopped in his next game. I don't think that streak has quite been broken. If it has, it was likely either Stephen Curry or Klay Thompson. But Barros, one of the early pioneers, you talk about Byron Scott with that Celtics team of the 80s, also Danny Ainge. Barros right in there as well as early, three-point pioneers in the history of the league. So, credit to those guys for what they were able to do in advancing that three-point shot. That's it for the show. Again, for tonight's schedule, this is our main episode that we would have done on Friday. We have an episode after this. It will be our bonus episode, Franchise Focus for the Atlanta Magic, before we get into our normal Monday episode a little bit later tonight. So again, apologies. Again, thank you for being patient with us. That's it for the first of these three episodes. Tune in for the next two. Please, you know, if you like what you've heard so far, thanks again for your support on the show. And regardless, we'll be back with you in just a few moments later tonight.